Malik Books. I'm Malik from Malik Books, your community bookstore specializing in African American books and gifts full of cultural diversity. The total African American experience that brings the world together. MalikBooks.com, your place to shop for books. MalikBooks.com. Malik Books is what you
need. Live from Leimert Park, USA, I'm Tavis Smiley. You're listening to KBLA Talk 1580. So glad to see you and me back in stride again. Our phone number, 1-800-920-1580. 1-800-920-1580. All of our socials can be found at KBLA 1580. That's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Everything at KBLA 1580. We invite you right now to download our app as well at KBLA 1580. Download the app. Take us with you anywhere in the world and listen to us in real time, but only if you download the app at KBLA 1580. Should you miss us any day in real time, check out the podcast of this program at your leisure by going to the app, the website, Anchor, Spotify, Apple, so many places to get the podcast and listen again at your leisure should you miss us any day in real time. But I am delighted to have you along live with us today for the next 3 hours. And speaking right quick of the podcast, if you missed yesterday's show, let me just say this. I've been blessed to do this now for about 30 years. I started when I was two. I've been doing it about 30 years now. And yesterday we had the most profound conversation I have ever had in my life about life and death, specifically death. And I wrestled with this conversation for days because how do you have an hour conversation about a subject matter that nobody wants to talk about? And so I wrestled and struggled with how to even engage the conversation. But we had a brilliant black philosopher named George Yancey. Dr. George Yancey was our guest yesterday. And if you missed hour two, you can see on our socials and everywhere else, this conversation has completely blown up. It completely, I think, arrested people yesterday. All of the brilliance on display in this conversation with this brilliant black philosopher named Dr. George Yancey out of Emory. A powerful, powerful, powerful conversation. I invite you, I implore you to go to the podcast and listen to that conversation yesterday. That's why I love the podcast. If you miss us, as I say every day, any day in real time, check out the podcast at your leisure. So let me just, highly suggest that you check out the podcast conversation yesterday with Dr. George Yancey. It is, again, the best conversation I've had in my entire career about issues of life and death, and I promise you, you will not be disappointed. Take it from me. Let me also invite you to follow me on Facebook and Instagram at The Real Tavis Smiley and get Twitter updates at Tavis Smiley. Another great show on tap for you today, just like yesterday. In our second hour, the biggest public fraud case in Mississippi history and why NFL Hall of Fame quarterback Brett Favre is all up in the mix. According to court documents, it appears that Favre, even after being warned that misuse of welfare funds could result in violation of federal law, he continued to press Mississippi Governor Phil Bryant to fund a sports facility at the University of Southern Mississippi where his daughter played volleyball. Last Thursday, a former top state official in Mississippi pled guilty to state and federal corruption charges in connection to a fraud and embezzlement scheme in which $77 million was funneled away from a program for needy families in the nation's poorest state into other ventures, including paying Brett Favre $1.1 million in 2017 and 2018 to make motivational speeches. I might add, this is the same Mississippi, in Jackson specifically, where black folk don't have clean drinking water. Connect the dots, people. It is the curious case of NFL Hall of Famer Brett Favre. In hour two with national sports writer and senior reporter for Front Office Sports, AJ Perez. In our third hour, American Psychoses, a historical investigation of how the Republican Party went crazy. How's that for a book title? The book's author, award-winning investigative reporter David Korn, joins us in hour three to unpack his latest text. The book takes a historical deep dive into how the GOP since the 1950s has exploited extremism, bigotry, and paranoia to gain power. David Korn is Washington Bureau Chief for Mother Jones Magazine and an analyst for MSNBC. And I look forward to that conversation with David Korn once we get to our final hour today. But in this first hour, Connie Rice is back, and I'm glad about it. She's back just in time for the January 6th committee hearings, which resume tomorrow. We are told this may be the final hearing of this January 6th select committee. Prominent committee members have said the hearings will be more sweeping than previous hearings and will contain more unheard significant witness testimony, that is. We know that Virginia Jenny Thomas, wife of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, has now finally agreed to, in fact, sit for an interview with the committee. We also know that following this week's hearings, all eyes will turn to the committee's final report, when it will be released, and what will be in it. So a lot to unpack with famed civil rights attorney and leading public intellectual Connie Rice, who I am pleased, as always, to welcome back to this program. Connie, how are you today?
Hey, Tavis, we're going to go from the profound to the profane. Sorry to say. From the eloquence and depth of Dr. Yancey.
Yeah.
This red hot mess.
Yeah, it is a red hot mess. But whenever you hear, the conversation is always profound. So Dr. Yancey was amazing yesterday, but so is Connie Rice whenever she shows up. And I am always thrilled to see on my schedule that Connie Rice is coming through for another conversation. Let me just jump right in and get to this January 6th Select Committee. So there are those who are arguing that we've seen enough and the case has been made. I've seen other articles and other pundits inside the Beltway suggest that maybe this the committee shouldn't box itself in by saying this is the final hearing. Before I get into the particulars of what we're going to hear tomorrow, what say you about whether or not the committee at this point has done its work, and has it done its work well?
Well, it's not. It's done its work, and it's done it well. It's just not finished.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that they're going to have time to finish because, unfortunately, I fear the House is going to switch hands, which is just an astounding situation that with the choices that you have, that this that anybody's voting for this other party that has decided to forget about democracy and destroy democracy. But that it's 50-50. So I'm afraid they're going to win, not by as much. But that means that this committee has an expiration date. And so their work will be done when their final report is issued, Tavis. But they're not going to hear from probably the most important witness they need to hear from, and that's Mike Pence, the former vice president.
Mm-hmm.
And he played his hand well, knowing that they wouldn't have time to force him to do it. So but here's the thing: their job was to tell the story of the great coup, the ongoing rolling coup d'etat that Donald Trump thought up way before this election, this past presidential election, even happened. He was laying the track for declaring the election a fraud way before the absentee ballots were rolled out. So they've told the story. And if you look at Roger Stone, he was saying it in 2016 when they thought they were going to lose to Hillary Clinton. They said, well, if he loses to Hillary Clinton, we'll just declare that he won, and then we'll duke it out, and maybe we'll call in our thugs. Mm-hmm. Well, that's exactly what they did for January 6th, right? But they were talking about that strategy, a Roy Cohn, kind of a dirty trickster, black ops lawyer who is very Machiavellian and Evie. He's kind of the political godfather to Donald Trump. And between that narcissist and Donald Trump's father, it's no wonder he's a spawn of Chucky. But the bottom line is that the committee has told the story effectively enough so that the American people tuned in, Tavis. And now saving democracy comes to the top of the things they're worried about, along with inflation mm-hmm. and climate change. So have they done the job? I think they've done enough of their job extremely well,
mm-hmm.
and it's because the Republicans, as usual, handed them a victory when they refused to do a bipartisan committee, and Chairman Benny Thompson and Vice Chair Cheney ran down the field with it and scored a touchdown. So bottom line, their job is different. They now need to hand it off to the Justice Department.
Mm-hmm.
They've teed it up so the Justice Department can dig down and get stuff this committee couldn't get. And I'm just the two areas, Pence and the Secret Service, what the heck was going on
yeah.
in those cars? He was on the ellipse, kind of lighting the fuse for the January 6th violent attack on the Capitol. Yep. So let's see what happens tomorrow. I think there'll be new testimony, video testimony. Don't know if they're going to be live witnesses. There's going to be a new theme. You know, each one has had a theme, the corruption of the DOJ, the corruption of Mike Pence. Each one had a theme, laying out the bricks in this infamous orange brick road. that and I love this new name, Travis. The orange, you know, the orange brick road to ending democracy.
Yeah.
The new name for him, you heard it from Liz Cheney, the orange Jesus.
Yeah.
I had all kinds of names for him. D.T. Barnum, the Lord of Liaria, you know, Benedict Donald. I mean, they're all kinds, you know, the stable genius. We've got a roster of names, but none beats the, I don't know which Republican came up with it, but they get the prize.
Yeah.
The orange Jesus. The stuff we do for the orange Jesus is the quote. And I said, okay, where's the book?
Yeah. Now, you've had some good ones, but that is a good one. Before I move forward, let me ask you right quick, and watching my time, let me ask you right quick about Mike Pence. As a matter of fact, I think when you were last on, we may have talked about this. So Mike Pence, some weeks back in a speech, as you'll recall, suggested that if he were asked to testify by the committee, he would in fact have to consider that seriously and show up. That's what he said. He wasn't prompted to say that. He said, if I'm invited, then essentially I will, you know, as an American, have to show up and testify. Why do you think he didn't?
I think he was virtue signaling. I think he was giving a speech before some sane people for a change. And the problem with Mike Pence is that he actually thinks he can still be president. He has no constituency. He's not a MAGA Republican. He's not that crap crazy. And he actually drew the line at overturning a fair election in a presidential election. So he's out because the orange Jesus, the stable genius, told him, you can be Jefferson or you can be Mike Pence. Mm. And thank goodness he chose to be Mike Pence because he decided not to scuttle the electoral count on January 6th. And barely escaped with his life, apparently, because, but yet he still thinks that there's a place for him in the MAGA Republican, the MAGA Trump party. There are no more Republicans. They're an endangered species, and they've got one white rhino left.
Yeah.
And he may be it. So there's no path for him. There's no lane for him anymore. And yet he's still virtue. He's not doing what he ought to do, which was to volunteer to come in and tell them what happened on January 6th. Instead, he's saying, well, if they send me an engraved invitation, I might show up, knowing that they don't have time to pull him in now. It's the end of the road for the committee.
Just getting started with Connie Rice on this orange brick road that may have its final journey tomorrow, according to the chairman of the committee, Benny Thompson. So again, a great deal to talk about. Connie's already said some things I want to interrogate her on when we come forward. You're listening to Connie Rice on KBLA Talk 1580.
Be sure to like and follow Tavis Smiley at The Real Tavis Smiley.
And get Twitter updates
at Tavis Smiley. The conversation continues when we come forward.
Malik Books. I'm Malik from Malik Books, your community bookstore, specializing in African-American books and gifts full of culture diversity, the total African-American experience that brings the world together. MalikBooks.com, your place to shop for books. MalikBooks.com.
Malik Books is what you need.
Conversations that matter. You're listening to Tavis Smiley on KBLA Talk 1580.
Continuing our conversation now with our regular contributor, Connie Rice, as we talk about the January 6th Select Committee hearing. We're told that tomorrow may be the last of these hearings, and then the conversation begins about the report, what will be in it, and whether or not there'll be referrals. We'll get to criminal referrals, that is. We'll get to that with Connie in a moment here. But Connie, let me come back to a couple of things you said earlier that I want to give you a chance to sort of unpack for us, as you see it at least. You mentioned Roger Stone. For those who recall Roger Stone, the guy with the white hair that always is dressed in a very dapper outfit, but he's been a Donald Trump fan and friend for many, many years in New York. And so it turns out that Roger Stone did a documentary for a company, I think, in Denmark, months before it was released, months before the election. And in this documentary, which we are told that we're going to see some footage of tomorrow, I've already seen some of this. You can find it if you look for it. But we're told that Roger Stone, months before the election, Connie, said that Donald Trump would use armed guards and loyal judges to stay in power. That's a quote. That Trump would use armed guards and loyal judges to stay in power. Now, this is Roger Stone forecasting this in a documentary in Denmark months before the election. And so we're told we're going to see some of that tomorrow. To your point, Connie, as they make this theme about the role that Donald Trump specifically played and those around him trying to overturn these elections and do whatever he could to stay in power. What do you make of those comments from Roger Stone months before the election even took place?
Well, at least he's staying in character. He's consistent, if nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, he's a black ops dirty trickster, okay? And he reminds me of Batman's Joker in a lot of ways.
Mm.
You know, it's twisted, and he's Machiavellian. He's cruel. He relishes twisting things inside out so that black looks white and up looks down. And that's the art of the chaos, right? They're chaos masters. And remember what Martin Luther King Jr. wrote in that essay, chaos or community.
Mm-hmm.
The choice will come down to white America, whether they want to make community that is fully integrated and dedicated to the realization of a constitutional promise extended to all, or are they going to torpedo the whole thing because they have to share? As Amanda Gorman said, the forces that would shatter rather than share the democratic promise.
Mm-hmm.
So Roger Stone is an agent of chaos, and that's why he's right by the commissar of chaos's side, Donald Trump. And that's how they maintain power. They undermine truth. They undermine institutions. They undermine rationality. They blow stuff up. They lie, so that no one can tell what's real, and they can come in and take over with all these conspiracy theories, fear mongering, hate mongering. It is what fascists do. Fascists are people who impose chaos to get power, and they do it at the expense and the cruelty to other people and the crushing of democratic institutions. So we are in a proto-fascist movement, and so the hearings were one pushback. You've got the attorneys general and DAs. You've got Fannie Willis in Georgia at the state level going after the electoral fraud. Remember, they had a multi-front assault to launch this coup to overturn the legitimate election of President Joe Biden. And remember, Roger Stone, in this documentary that you referenced, Tavis, he's in the documentary saying, I said a lot, this is Roger Stone speaking, long time ago, he said, they tell you they've won, you tell them, hell, you haven't won, we've won. And by the way, we've got thugs with guns who are going to tell you we've won. Mm. And then we've got judges we appointed who will rule our way. So you can't win in court. You can't win at the ballot box. You can't win in the media because we've taken over with all the lies and conspiracy theories. You can't win on Twitter or anywhere in social media because you've got Russia flooding stuff on our behalf, and we got nation states backing our fascist moves. And so they have it wired on. It's like they put C4 in every single platform and avenue that we use to protect democracy.
Mm. You know, I'm listening to you, and I pause for a second there, Connie, because I'm listening to you, and I'm not naive in asking this question. I'm not naive at all about this. But it is the sort of wanton hubris that you don't see every single day. But I want to step back for a second. Imagine that this is a guy who's close to the president, Roger Stone, who's on tape in a documentary that's released in advance of the election saying this. I mean, what happened to the day when it was like, you know, sort of, you know, quiet subterfuge? You did it behind the scenes. This guy is out front on videotape in a documentary saying what Trump is going to do to use armed guards and loyal judges to stay in power before Election Day in a documentary. Again, that kind of hubris, just I don't know how to even process that, Connie.
Well, it's when you're running, I mean, the Trump administration, to me, is more akin to a transnational crime family than a government, right? So when you give criminals power, this is what you get. This is sort of outlaw politics. And it's the power of destruction, the power of the wrecking ball. They're not there to build anything. They're there to destroy. They're not there to solve any problems. They're there to use problems to generate fear and hate.
But the mafia, the mob, Connie, they don't go on national television or documentaries and tell you what they're going to do.
Well, that's because that wouldn't work for them. They're after money. These folks are after power.
Mm-hmm. I see your point.
they got a different goal. Okay.
Okay.
Same tactics, different goal. But the tactics have to change, because to get power, you have to hijack the systems that allot power. Your elections, your committees, your judges. That's our democratic framework, the Madisonian framework. They've got to destroy that because it requires truth. To some extent, it requires a focus on policy. You're supposed to be delivering to people. Well, they have to lie to people because they can't tell people the truth. If you tell people, I want to destroy Medicare, I want to destroy Social Security, because we think that corporations are people, and we think that all of the country's wealth ought to go to us and our billionaire friends. What was the one thing that the Trump administration achieved? They didn't end Obamacare. They didn't address climate change. In fact, they deny climate change. What they do, they passed a massive tax cut for the rich. That's mm-hmm. what this is about. This is about maintaining the power and the money funneled upwards. There is a fabulous guest. I'm going on 70. I can't remember his name. I think it's Peter Hartman. I'll get you the name. Mm-hmm. But he's done an analysis, because the reason our social contract is falling apart, the reason you have all of these folks storming the Capitol and believing QAnon craziness, and that's how you know Trump is panicked. He's now embracing QAnon at his rallies. Okay, he's having QAnon meltdown while Putin's having a nuclear war meltdown. But when you look at this pattern of seeding this coup d'etat, seeding this destruction of democracy, what you're seeing, the reason they can take over and get traction and lay this kind of track to destroy democracy, is because too many people have suffered from the heist. The big heist that Hartman shows has been $50 trillion of funneling public and other kinds of wealth into the top 1%. The gap, the inequality gap, is bigger than the Grand Canyon at this point. And when the inequality gap gets too great, Tavis, the social bonds, the civic bonds, your civic infrastructure disintegrates. Collapses.
Let me cut in right there, Connie. Let me get some news, traffic, and sports out of the way. We'll come back and pick up on this point here. And I know the person you're referencing. His name is Peter Hart. I've known him for years. He's one of the nation's top analysts of public opinion. So Peter Hart is a brilliant researcher. I know of the person that you speak, and I will look up the research that you reference, and perhaps have Peter Hart as a guest on this program in the days ahead. In this day and in this hour, our guest, though, is Connie Rice, and pleased to have Connie back. As always, we'll continue our conversation with her about the January 6th Select Committee hearing resuming tomorrow, perhaps the final hearing, and a great deal more. We'll get into some politics on the other side of news, traffic, and sports. You are listening to Connie Rice and Tavis Smiley on KBLA Talk 1580.
This is KBLA Talk 1580, where hate loses and love wins.
I'm Tavis Smiley. This is KBLA Talk 1580. So glad to have you with us in this hour. Our guest is Connie Rice, and we are talking all things January 6th Select Committee. In case you've just tuned in, we are told that the committee is resuming its hearings tomorrow, and tomorrow may be the final hearing of the January 6th Select Committee. After that, the report will be written up, and there's a lot to talk to Connie about vis-a-vis the report, which we'll get to in just a second here. Before news, traffic, and sports, Connie, you were finishing up a point I want you to complete the circle on, and the point you were making was essentially what happens when the democratic infrastructure collapses. Continue your point. We'll move from there.
When inequality gets too big, Tavis, because what we've been doing is we've been engineering downward mobility for working class and middle class people, and the poor never did get out of the ditch. But for the vast majority of Americans, and especially African Americans, we've been engineering downward mobility. There has been an increase in the black middle class and so forth, and but in general, for the overall population, the rich got richer, the poor got a lot poorer. And when that gap gets too big, the shared prosperity that's the glue that holds us together civically and supports our system and our institutions, that starts to melt down, unravel, collapse. And that's the frame we're in. And the reason the hearings are important is that they're sort of a last-ditch Hail Mary to stop the complete breakdown and destruction of our democratic system. Look, Italy just elected a fascist.
Mm-hmm.
The fascists in Germany are starting to rise. You had the fascists telling lies to fund the Brexit movement when Britain left the European Union. This is a global movement that's an attack on democracy from the suppression of the Arab Spring. You remember those folks were in the streets demonstrating for freedom and democracy? Their dictator said, oh, no. They saw what happened to Gaddafi and to Saddam Hussein. They said, oh, no, we got to quash this stuff. Putin saw the Orange Revolution, you know, in the satellite countries that used to be part of the Soviet Union. He said, oh, no, I'm grabbing that back. I'm invading Ukraine. I'm taking Crimea. So all of the fascist dictators, they're on the rise globally and in this country. That's why you have the MAGA nuts that have, they're not Republicans. They are reactionary fascists who have invited the global fascists to come. They just had the woman who's the first Italian prime minister, but she is an acolyte. She is a worshiper of Mussolini, the World War II fascist dictator that was with Hitler. So understand there's a national, international frame for this that's related to what we're seeing in this country. And the committee's hearings, it's hard for folks who are losing their apartments and worried they're going to survive a hurricane and see none of the black agenda has been achieved, not voting rights, not the end of voter suppression. They've moved from voter suppression to election annihilation. They're just going to deny the whole thing. So a lot of our immediate agenda hasn't been achieved, but we've got to turn our attention to the reason to pay attention to the committee is that they're trying to save the framework that gives us a fighting chance.
Yeah.
Once that goes, Tavis, we've got no tools.
If you have not read anything or seen anything about this new right-wing fascist that was elected in Italy, who Connie references a moment ago, her name is Giorgia Meloni. Giorgia Meloni. You should read about it because these dots, as I said earlier, are not disconnected. They're not disparate. When you see what's happening here, see what's happening in Italy, see what's happening in Germany, you start to get a sense of what's happening on the world stage, and that it should give you some pause. But you should read about this woman, Ms. Meloni, who was just elected prime minister in Italy. It is scary. I digress on that for the moment. I'm working our way, Connie, into a broader conversation about our democracy. You've already teed that up. Before I get to that straight away, two final things about the January 6th Select Committee. One, we know that they're going to play some Roger Stone video tomorrow from the documents we discussed earlier. We also know, we're told, that we're going to learn more about Mark Meadows, Trump's former chief of staff. And what we're going to find out tomorrow, is that Mr. Meadows, we now know, was in direct contact, not three or four steps removed. We know that he was in direct contact with, via text, the man whose name is Phil Waldron, who was plotting to seize voting machines. I mean, they had a real plan here. They were going to seize voting machines in Arizona and Georgia to start and go from there. You heard Connie reference Fannie Willis earlier, and all that we know about what Trump tried to do in Georgia to pressure the attorney general there to overturn the election results. So we now know there was a guy named Phil Waldron who was literally on the payroll and was plotting to seize voting machines. Just go steal the machines. Believe it or not, in Arizona, Georgia, and beyond, this Phil Waldron was in direct text contact with the White House Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows. Connie, that was arresting to me to read, maybe not to you, but how do you process that? Because that also, we're told, will be a part of these hearings tomorrow.
Well, I think that we may not be able to connect direct dots, but all we have to do is remember when Trump gave his signal to the Proud Boys during the presidential debate. Mm-hmm. Remember, he told the Proud Boys, stand by, mm-hmm. I'll let you know when I need you. Well, after he failed to, he told Bill Barr to, he tried to corrupt the DOJ by telling Bill Barr, arrest Joe Biden 2 weeks before the election. Bill Barr said, we're not doing it. Then he tried to get them to do the fake electors. Bill Barr said he wasn't going to do that. If you can't get Bill Barr to do the print, you know they're out. They're out in la-la land. And he tried to corrupt the DOD, the Department of Defense. He was going to order the military to seize voting machines, and the military told him that's not what we do. Mm. So he tried everything. You know, he went from department to department. He tried the judges, 60 cases, Rudy DeGale. It's hard for a lawyer to lose 60 in a row. I mean, that makes the Red Sox look like, you know, national champ. You know, they won the World Series.
Yeah.
That's a World Series of failure there. They couldn't even get the Trump judges to agree there was election fraud. So the fraudits, they tried fraudits, they tried fraud litigation that failed. They tried everything until Trump realized his last card to play, his last corruption strategy, was to launch a violent coup d'etat to stop the counting of the electoral votes. And that's what we saw on January 6th. That was just the pinnacle of an ongoing coup d'etat. Now, they haven't stopped. And that's the thing that we have to realize. The hearing is kind of a momentary photograph of an ongoing attempt to overturn the next election. They've already got all these candidates teed up who are going to be election deniers, where they're going to simply do what Roger Stone said to do, which is, we don't accept the results. Mm-hmm. We're not going to accept your electors. We've got our own fake electors. We're going to replace our electors with your electors. We're not accepting the results. And by the way, we've got the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers in the wings with their AR-57s. AK, you know, I don't have guns. Mm-hmm. AK-50, whatever it is. They've got guns. They've got bear spray. They've got nooses. And we can launch them anytime. And those folks who marched in Charlottesville to preserve the Confederate monuments and talking about Jews won't replace us, the fine Nazis that Trump saw in that demonstration, those are the folks they're going to trigger. So that's called fascism. We are on the road to fascism, and mm-hmm. that's what we're trying to stop.
So one final thing about the committee hearings tomorrow, and then we'll move talk a little politics before we lose you at the top of the hour. So let me do this right quick. I'm watching my clock here. So there are a couple committee members, a few, in fact. Adam Schiff out of California, of course, who's chair of the House Intelligence Committee. But Adam Schiff has said this. Liz Cheney, the vice chair, said this, and a couple others, that they do intend to make criminal referrals. If they have their way, there will be criminal referrals to DOJ, the Department of Justice, and there's debate about whether or not this report from the committee, if tomorrow's the final hearing, Connie, will come before or after the midterms. There may be some interim report, we're told, before the midterms, and a full report after. Let me give you 2 minutes right quick to address both of those, and on the latter, whether or not you think politically it would be wise to release the report before or after the midterms. Take those two issues, the criminal referrals and the final report itself.
Final report, I think, is going to have to come right before the turnover of the House, I'm afraid, that's going to happen. So there might be an interim report before the midterms, which would be fine. I think that they're going to do that. I think they're determined to give the voters at least the story, the outline that they of what they found. On the criminal referrals, they've already made the criminal referral. DOJ has already picked up several of the batons mm-hmm. that the committee has informally handed over. I don't know that there's no power of this committee to make criminal referrals. It would just be a letter saying, we think the following things happened, you need to go investigate. I don't know if that's worth the political Velcro that's going to attach. Mm. This committee has done an excellent job. I don't know that making a criminal referral will help its status.
We shall see. What that letter entails, and we shall see whether or not, to Connie's point, they release some sort of interim report before the midterms and a full report afterwards, but there are obviously politics on that as well, what will be said and done, and how it might embolden one side, disrupt the other side, who knows? If the report does, in fact, come out just before the midterms, you can rest assured there'll be all kind of politics and political conversations about the impact of dropping this report before the midterm elections. But many would argue that Democrats would be wise to do so. It might aid and abet them come election day. Speaking of elections, when we come forward, two new polls that are out that I want to get Connie's temperature, take her temperature on. One from the New York Times, one from the Washington Post, ABC. The New York Times poll suggests that 64% of Democrats, 64% of Democrats believe that Joe Biden should not stand for re-election in 2024. The Washington Post, ABC poll says that 56% of Democrats do not believe that Biden should stand for re-election. Now, juxtapose that data with the fact that his poll numbers are as high now as they've ever been, basically. His poll numbers are up. And yet Democrats are saying in two different polls, New York Times and Washington Post, a majority of Democrats saying he should not seek re-election. We'll take Connie's temperature on that when we come forward on KBLA Talk 1580.
Malik Books. I'm Malik from Malik Books, your community bookstore specializing in African-American books and gifts full of cultural diversity. The total African-American experience that brings the world together. MalikBooks.com, your place to shop for books. MalikBooks.com.
Malik Books is what you need.
Interrogating your assumptions
and expanding your inventory of ideas.
Let's get back to Tavis Smiley on KBLA Talk 1580.
So, Connie, we've been talking for the better part of this hour about our democracy. Let's now talk about Democrats. So, again, two new polls, one for the New York Times, one from the Washington Post. New York Times poll, again, finds that 64% of Democrats believe that Biden should not stand for re-election. Washington Post, ABC News poll, 56% of Democrats said the same thing, that he should not run for re-election. How do you read those numbers, particularly juxtaposed against other polls that suggest that his poll numbers are up now as high as they've been in quite some time? He's had a string of victories of late. So I'm trying to square these two things. How do you read those two realities?
I think the Democrats who are responding to these polls are a little unrealistic. I think most Democrats have the delusion that we're still in a democracy frame, and we're actually in a coup d'etat frame.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about whether you like Biden or not. It's about whether Trump runs again, because Trump can get back into the White House. And you know it's bad when I say the following. I'm with Liz Cheney. Okay, let's okay. All right.
Didn't see that coming. Connie.
With Liz Cheney. Yeah. I am in the Liz Cheney fan club at this point. We would part company once we achieve the mission of saving democracy from a coup d'etat and making sure that Trump never gets anywhere near the White House unless he's asking for a pardon. So understand, I don't think the Democrats understand this. They think we're in a normal, and they can't understand why he couldn't get more policy through. Well, he got some of the biggest bills, the COVID recovery bill, he got the infrastructure bill, he's gotten some massive bills through, in spite of having two senators who insist on a slavery preservation-based filibuster, and cling to that because they're actually defending mining companies and corporations and hedge funds rather than Democratic, regular folks who are regular voters in the Democratic Party. So when they're asked, do you like Biden by itself, they may say we're not too happy with him, but wait till the orange Jesus comes back, because he's got to get the nomination. Right now, he's going to get the nomination. He has to run because he needs money for his criminal defense. He's under 14 different civil and criminal investigations. He's about to go into negotiations. I don't think he can go to trial in the state attorney general Tish James's 200-page indictment of him. She has nailed him to the wall and his company to the wall, and I think she's going to take down the Trump organization. So that's just one case.
Yeah.
He needs money, and he's going to have to run for office. So I think they got to be realistic. Biden is the only one who's ever beaten him. I don't think anybody else can.
Let me ask Connie two other questions right quick about Donald Trump when we come forward in our remaining moments. You're listening to KBLA Talk 50.
Malik Books. I'm Malik from Malik Books, your community bookstore specializing in African-American books and gifts full of cultural diversity. The total African-American experience that brings the world together. MalikBooks.com, your place to shop for books. MalikBooks.com.
Malik Books is what you need.
Let's unpack a little bit more with Tavis Smiley. The conversation continues right now. Right now.
Got a little less than 5 minutes left with Connie Rice. Just enough time to cover a few other things. So one, Connie, I am wondering, given what you said a moment ago, whether you think, you said a moment ago that Trump has to run. Okay, I hear the argument, but will he be able to run? In other words, will he be, and you're the lawyer, not me, will he be in a legal situation where he is so tethered? Again, obviously, if you've been found guilty of something, you can't run. But will he be so tethered to these cases that he'll be unable to run, or is it your argument that's precisely why he will run?
That's precisely why he will run.
Okay.
It's part of his defense. And right now, he's not convicted of anything, and it depends on what he's convicted of as to whether it precludes him from running.
Right.
If he gets convicted under the Espionage Act, he'll be precluded from running for federal office again. And that may be the plea bargain that he does. I think this documents case and the Attorney General of New York's case is the biggest threat to his organization and his ability to borrow and so forth. But his own personal liberty, I think, is most at stake in the espionage case. So, I don't know, Tab. Yeah. It's amazing that the base, if it's up to the base of the MAGA the MAGA Trump party, Trump will be the nominee.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then I think and I'm just fingers crossed, toes, eyes, legs crossed that Biden stays healthy.
Yeah.
Because he is the one candidate who can probably defeat him. I do not underestimate the ability of Trump to get back into the White House. Not underestimate that.
To Connie's point, I didn't say this, I could have. These same polls that I referenced, the New York Times and Washington Post polls, that found that the majority of Democrats don't want Biden to run again. You may or may not be surprised by this. The majority of Republicans in those very same polls do want Donald Trump to run again. So Connie's point underscored here, don't underestimate his ability to get on the ballot and perhaps even win the White House again. So those poll numbers are worth sharing. In the 2 minutes I have left, let me close with this. And I'm swinging way out. I promise it, but I promise you Connie can handle it, though. I'm going way out on this. I was thinking, as you were talking about Trump not coming near the White House, coming anywhere near the White House unless he's asking for a pardon. For some reason, my mind just went back historically to Richard Nixon being pardoned by Gerald Ford. So I'm just curious, and again, this is way out, I promise, but I apologize. So imagine that, you know, whatever happens in 2024, a Republican takes over the White House, a Republican other than Donald Trump, say Biden and Harris are not reelected, Republican takes over. Can you imagine any scenario under which a Republican president would do as Gerald Ford did and pardon Donald Trump?
Oh, surely. Absolutely. I think you could count on it.
Wow.
Because I don't think a traditional Republican can get elected by this MAGA Trump party. Remember, there's no Republican party anymore. It's a Trump party.
Right.
That is not Republican. That is a proto-fascist movement to end democracy. And they would pardon him. It may be the deal that he says, I will back you as a nominee because you can win. And part of the deal is you pardon me. I think that's the deal that Nixon and Ford also made.
Wow. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that until you made that reference. But I thought I would ask. Final question here. At this point, every time you come on, I ask you this question. You've been consistent as Connie Rice always is. But at this point, given that tomorrow may be the final hearing, got about 45 seconds left, do you at this point see Merrick Garland, the Attorney General, moving or not moving vis-a-vis indictment and prosecution of Donald Trump?
I think in the documents, the top security heist that he did, all those documents, top security, I think in that case, he will indict. I think he has to indict. In the insurrection case, it depends on which dots he connect direct. He can connect directly because the committee is going to hand him a bill of indictment. It's going to make some findings. If I were head of that committee, I would just make the findings of fact and document it and hand it to DOJ. And depending on how many of those findings they can dig down to the level of beyond a reasonable doubt proof, that will determine which indictments come out of that process. Espionage Act, yes. January 6th insurrection, still a question mark.
Love, 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 love. Be some Connie Rice. Never met anyone smarter in my life, and I know a lot of smart people, but I'm always honored to have Connie on this program. Connie, we'll do it again soon. Take care of yourself.
You take care, Tavis.
The Curious Case of Brett Favre when we come forward in hour two of Tavis Smiley on KBLA Talk 1580.
KBLA 1580 Santa Monica.